Hey, Blenders, on this week's show, Fedi Alvarez joins the show to discuss the making of Alien Romulus.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome. Welcome to episode number 318 of Real Blend, a podcast that also debuts on Rotten Tomatoes at 0%. But we're up to 4% now. Thank you very much. On this week's show, Fedi Alvarez returns. He's going to be joining us to discuss his new film, Alien Romulus. And later on in the show, we're going to give you a spoiler-free and spoiler-filled reaction to Romulus, because if you've been paying attention on social media, we've got thoughts. We've got some conversations we got to get into. There's people who are hitting me up on social and saying, a little divide in the ranks amongst the Roblin boys. So I like to see people paying attention to this. My name is Sean O'Connell. I'm the managing editor at Cinema Blend and a co-host of the Roblin podcast, as I have been from the very beginning. Joined, as always, this week by Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago and Gabe Kovach from, I guess, St. Louis. How are you boys doing today?
Doing good. Great. I think I'm in St. Louis.
You are.
Yeah. I guess.
I'd like to go on the record and just say that I really do like Kevin McCarthy.
Weird going on between you two.
We keep joking about the fact, just by nature of how schedules have been, and God knows with the DNC coming to Chicago next week, what my schedule is going to be like, and then I'm sure he'll be available. Sean pointed out, it really does look like he and I can't stand being... We look like Blake Lively and the director of It Ends With Us. We just can't be seen.
Oh, now don't pull us into that controversial nonsense. I don't want to be part of that at all. Jake was joking.
Yeah, I'm joking. But it really does look like Kevin and I can't be on the show together. But I promise we really do love each other.
It's a contractual thing. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We met this summer and we came to terms.
Yes.
And Jake and Kevin can't be on the show at any time anymore. Unless we're interviewing M. Night Shyamalan. That's the only thing.
Then, you sat between us.
I did.
That's the funny thing. I think it's worked out for the most part that when one of you is hosting, the other one is interviewing on that week. So it's like you're both on the episode.
Yeah.
You're just not on the episode together ever at the same time.
I went back and rewatched the M. Night interview because I was pulling a story about him telling us about that alternate ending to The Village, which you can now read on Cinema Blend if you would like to, which is a terrific story about he cast himself as someone driving a car who almost hits Bryce Dallas Howard as she emerges from the woods, and he's blasting Jay-Z's 99 Problems. Anyway, the point I bring this up is because I looked so stupid in that interview in my t-shirt and pants, and you two dressed like the guys from Reservoir Dogs. So I'm going to need you two to start slumming it down a little bit.
I love that your answer is not, I'll start dressing up.
No.
You could just wear a collared shirt, you know, with like a, you know what I thought? You know what I thought that I had, Sean? And I was going to text Michelle, your lovely wife, to ask for your jacket size. I was like, I should just get Sean like a sport coat and just be like, just pack this in your bag. And then when you show up and they're wearing a suit, just kind of throw that over your t-shirt and just, you know, cash.
Kind of like what Jake's doing. Like Jake's got this going on
maybe
right
that,
now.
He's maybe that'll be my Christmas present to you, Sean.
Not a bad idea. God damn it. I'm like a child. You have to dress. It's terrible. If you'd like to see Jake's look, head over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/RealBlendPodcast. Most people, I think, are following us on the YouTube channel. But if you are not, please head over there, hit subscribe. Oh, Gabe, I think we passed 36,000 followers.
Wow. 36. Yeah, subscribers. 36. Keep sharing.
keep sharing. Of course, we're available all different places you get your audio needs met. And if you would like to sign up for the Real Blend Premium, it gets you an ad-free version of the show and a newsletter from us every single week. Okay, so Fede Alvarez has been on the show before. I believe he came on to talk about Don't Breathe 2. And I don't think he came on for Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, but he's been on the show before. So
he joined us for with his writing partner for his writing partner's movie he directed. Was it Don't Breathe 2?
Yeah, I think it was. I think he came on for Don't Breathe 2.
Yeah, I think it was the two of them.
That's not who we got for Evil Dead Rise, right?
Oh, no.
No, we got somebody different for that.
Yeah.
Who knows? Our show has been around for so long.
You know, if you want to know, if you're at home and you want to know, you could search our lovely YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And just enjoy the wealth of content that is there.
Or direct message a friend of the show, Donovan, who keeps track of all of our guests.
That's true.
And put them on a poster for us, which was
Donovan does a better job than I do. Yeah. It just gets lost and scrambled in my brain.
Donovan's our show historian.
True. Wow, that's an awesome title. Donovan, you're officially now show historian.
You know what? I kind of like that. I've been looking for a way to give Donovan some sort of authority here. So,
show historian. I'm going to make him a business card. Yeah. So, Gabe, you have two things to do. Make a business card for Donovan and send me a sport coat.
So you a sport coat? Okay. When do I get a business card? I don't have a business card.
The list is growing. Anyway, Fede Alvarez, friend of the show. Really great guy. Terrific director. And has a movie coming out called Alien Romulus. According to the timeline, this falls between Alien and Aliens. This is made clear in the trailer. It has some direct ties to things that happen in Ridley Scott's film. He has talked about in the run up to this, conversations that he has had and feedback sessions that he got to do with the great Sir Ridley Scott, the great James Cameron. Jake, I don't know if I even told you this. We had Fetty in the and the whole Romulus cast in our San Diego Comic-Con
suite,
which you should go listen to that interview. Really good insight. But what I've totally blanked on is Stephen Lang is in the Don't Breathe movies.
Yeah.
And then he's in Avatar. So he showed Don't Breathe to Cameron. And then Cameron was like, I want to meet this guy, and brought Fetty to New Zealand. And they started shooting the breeze there.
Can you imagine James Cameron calls and says, hey, can you meet me in New Zealand?
Yeah. Come on out, hang out on the Avatar set. And then Fetty actually said it this way. He called them pen pals. They're pen pals.
Wow.
Pretty amazing.
It'd almost be like Quentin Tarantino saying, hey, come record your podcast in my home.
That did happen. Yeah.
Betty might have a little bit of a leg up, though, with the
pen pal situation.
You're right. Hey, you have a letter from Tom Hanks, you know, technically.
Who doesn't?
Who doesn't?
Yeah, I've got mine somewhere over here, too. But apparently we can't talk about Quentin because we recycle those interviews too many times.
Oh, stop.
Someone read the comment section.
Sean, I need you to take a break from the comments.
It's all right. Salty. All right, anyway, Fede Alvarez
it's
is
me
on
leaving
the show.
The comments.
To discuss his new film, Alien Romulus. This is a great conversation. We get into the ins and outs of putting this movie together, set pieces, the amazing Kaylee Spaney, all this incredible stuff you're going to want to listen to. So here it is, Fede Alvarez joining the show on behalf of Alien Romulus.
How you guys
doing?
Hey,
good, Fetty. How are you doing?
Nice to see you again.
It's a pleasure to have you back on the show. This is one of the best movies I've seen this year. I'm blown away by how good it is.
Thank you so much. That's what I need to hear today.
No, oh my God, please. I'm going to be one of the first of many to tell you that, I'm sure.
Thank you. I hope that's true.
One of the best compliments I can pay you is that I cared so deeply about the characters that you created here, which isn't always the case in a horror film. I'm curious, when you're writing, how attached you let yourself get to certain characters, which bonds formed on Romulus, and if an emotional bond ever sort of changed the direction that you were going as you were shaping a story.
Well, yes, I do. But the more attached I get to them, the more sometimes I have the urge to kill them. I think because that is the mission. That is the mission. It's just too good. Once you become so lovable, it's a low hanging fruit. I was like, oh, that now I know how to gonna inflict damage in the audience in the next scene. If I just kill this one. It's truly an exercise, a perverse exercise of making you love people to just kill them. And look, if I didn't kill anybody, you'll ask for your money back. So don't, you know, no one can act shock. That's exactly the point of this film. But I'm glad you feel that way. It's really important for me as well. It's like you got to have, it's really about having But really likable. People say likable a lot of times. That's not truly what it is. I think once you know what a character desires deep down and you know what they want out of life, it just makes you connect with them in a way that usually you don't otherwise. If you don't know what they want, who they are, like, it's just hard to see them as real people. But once you do, like these people, from the very beginning, you understand exactly what they want. And they all want something slightly different, but they're all driven by this desire to escape and do better with their lives. And everybody admires that. So when he admires the characters for their will and their bravery, it just connect with them at a deeper level, right?
Well, they're street level too. It's science fiction, but they're street level characters who are under the thumb of the government. You feel that instantly from the get-go, which I think makes them a bit relatable as well too.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Fede, obviously you were able to show the movie to the great Ridley Scott early in the process, and I saw an interview with him recently where he said that he sent you some notes that may have caused you, I think he said, to punch the wall or kick the door. Are you willing to share what...
He's probably... I saw that yesterday. I was like, well, he probably said it in a figurative way. He's not that he's wrong. It's just that he knows as a director... No director has ever given a set of notes and said, like, can't wait to read them and go, like, yeah, I'll do them all. It's so good. Like, no. Any director, like, you know, that is take himself seriously and is trying his best usually would put forward a movie that when he showed it to you is because it believes that is the movie and it believes that's the movie we should make. So when you say, well, and someone says you should change this and that, you'd never go, like, absolutely, sir. Yes, sir. You got to rebel a little bit, and I definitely fought back a lot of things, ideally, which is the best case scenario, you have a producer that has a strong point of view, and you have a director that has a strong point of view, and between the two of them, you meet in the middle, and you find the truth of what the movie should be, right? But it's been it is a privilege, I tell you. There's a lot of people. Are obsessed with this concept these days of that a director total freedom of creativity, it's equal good movies. And I think those people are out of their minds because a lot of directors have had the chance to make those movies in streaming these days lately. I don't think that's their best work. I think all the masterpieces of cinema were made by a director that had to fight a lot of opinions. I had to fight a studio that was really strong. I had to fight a producer that was really strong. And out of that friction, the best work comes out. And I think the best movies have come out of that. So I'm lucky that I had Ridley that was really had strong point of view that I could debate with and find a better movie.
So we're not going to see a 5-hour director's cut of Romulus coming anytime soon?
No. All the movies I put out, all my movies, I think for good or for bad, are the director's cut. I have never put out a movie that was not my cut, that was someone else's cut. I have never.
Wow.
Fede, I know this is an easy topic, but I'm obsessed with Kaley Spaney. And I can't understand how a filmmaker can see someone in Priscilla... you know, and see someone in Pacific Rim and Civil War, all these different projects and think like, oh yeah, she's perfect for my thing, but she fits everywhere. She has this malleability that I think is just fascinating. I just want to know what she's like as a collaborator. What did she bring to you as you were putting this together?
Well, you got to think that when I cast her, she wasn't in any of those movies. The only thing she had done was that I had seen at the time was Pacific Rim probably. And El Royale. And she had been on Devs, but, when I remember when she came home to talk about the script, she was going to meet Priscilla for the first time, actually Priscilla Presley, just to start preparing for this. So she had gotten that role very recently as well. So I just think she has an incredible craft, which means she learns her lines and she's in time and she's really good professional actor, which I tell you, it's rare these days. Particularly when they're young, they tend to be a bit more reckless and they learn the lines in the car as they go to the shoot and it's a bit of a pain.
Oh, no.
But she's not like that. She really knows. She has a really good craft and learned her lines and she's really good with her dialogue and it's impeccable technique. Then she has something that you cannot buy that is her eyes. You know, the best actors are the ones that you put the camera in their eyes, and even if they do nothing, it's just blank and zoning out, they tell half of the story. You know, it saves you from from a lot of dialogue where they have to explain where they came from, how their youth was, if they grew up in a lovely home or not, if they lost anybody, if they've been through painful times or not. And faces like her are you know, they worth they have a lot of worth because of that, because they tell half of the story by just looking at them, right? And that's what she has. There's a big story in her eyes right away, right?
That's incredible.
Fede, it goes without saying, you guys created some flawless, beautiful, gorgeous, practical xenomorphs for the film. I've always wanted to know, and maybe self-serving because I have a beautiful empty spot in my apartment, what happens to them when the movie's over? Like, does someone get to keep them? Do they end up in a Raiders of the Lost Ark storage shed? Like, where do they go?
You couldn't have described it better. It is a bit of a Raiders of the Lost Ark storage. That's the Legacy facility. The guys from Legacy, which you know, work on Aliens and Created the Queen and worked in Jurassic Park and you name it, right? Any movie with great animatronics, they've been in it. From those to, you know, Baby Yoda or Grogu, whatever he's called on Mandalorian, they did it themselves as well. So they have created so many things. I remember like walking, they have a big warehouse and I was walking through it looking at the crates, and it's exactly like a Raiders of the Lost Ark, all massive crates. And I remember you read the labels and you go like, Rhino from Jumanji, you know, like, oh my God. And then you look at the way, like, it's just endless the names of things that you cannot believe that are in there. Like, it makes you want to make some sort of night at the museum, but night at Legacy, right? Where all these things come alive at night.
Aren't you in a position to be able to say, like, I'm taking one? Like, this is, like, you guys, you know, there are a bunch of them. There was that great story. I think after Jurassic Park, Spielberg gave Velociraptors to the entire cast. Like, you're in a position in your career, you could say, you know what,
I think my office, between all the toys and all the things that I already had in the past and in figures and stuff, I don't have any room for it. But I'm gonna try to get one. And I got some things from the movie. I got some things. But I do not have a xenomorph at home. It's just too big. I mean, you've seen those guys; they're really big. So I don't think my wife will be happy about it.
Does the office have a turkey baster, Fetty?
It does. It is there. It is there.
All right, good. That's all I really wanted to know.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This movie was reportedly heading to Hulu, and I think you got the news that it was going to get theatrical release before you finished filming. Is that correct?
Even before. The only reason why it was for Hulu originally was because we made deals for the movie to start writing in 2021, and there was no theaters at the time. There was no theater business, really. And so I think Disney was betting on their platforms to put these movies But they were betting big on it, you know. It wasn't that they were giving us a small budget to try to do the streaming version of it. It was just really that there was no theaters. But by the time we finished the script and I think we were already in pre-production, or I think we already started shooting at the first days of shooting, I already knew early on that it was going to transition. It was going to be theatrical. We never made it for streaming. And I think on the first few days of shooting, I had the chance to tell the whole crew the good news that it was going to go to theaters, and it's incredible. Even for the gaffer and the PAs, it means the world to go to theaters. You'll be shocked how happy they were. You know, that sometimes you think it will make no difference, but it definitely does.
No, because I can't imagine not seeing this movie on the big screen. And I know, like, as an example, like Prey is a movie that went to Hulu, and fans of that movie want to see it in the biggest,
yeah,
you know,
deserve to
possible.
Be in the big screen. Yeah, but that was also a product of that those times and those deals, sure, that wouldn't allow the studio couldn't really put it in theaters even if they wanted, and they yeah. I know they wanted to, but they couldn't.
Yeah, but without giving anything away, there are obvious some ties and callbacks to some of the original movies in Romulus. I'm sort of curious. I know she was still sleeping and floating around in space at the time of this movie, but was there ever any version of this story or an attempt to find a way to work Ridley into the story at all? Or is it kind of impossible because she's just out there floating around sleeping at this point?
Well, I wouldn't say it's impossible, because no one knows exactly what happened in all those years that she's been drifting away. I cannot say more. I think for legal reasons, I cannot say more. I would say it's not impossible. And I think it's totally possible.
I feel like we touched on something, but
I think it's totally possible that it could have been a part of the story somehow. That's all I can say.
Like maybe in earlier drafts, potentially it was part of the story somehow.
No. It's like it is. I think you have to ask me this question again. Let's put it in the books, and you ask me this question maybe, you know, a month from now when people. I think wait for people to see the movie, and it is right in front of you. There's a few things I've hidden in that movie that is the answer to this question. It's just very well hidden, but they're kind of hiding in plain sight. And I'm just waiting for that guy on his own watching the movie for the third time and starting going like, wait a minute, and going insane, discovering a few clues that I have planted in the movie. But if I tell you, it kind of defeats the whole purpose.
No, that's fair, because I really was fascinated in that it seems the genesis of Romulus stems from an unanswered question from Alien, which is, what happens to that alien that gets ejected out into space? So I was going to literally ask you if there are dangling plot threads that you left in Romulus in case another filmmaker wanted to come around and sort of play in this sandbox.
They're there. People need to find them. They haven't found them yet, but they're there, you know, just so maybe this is a good opportunity to send them on the hunt for those clues.
All right. I'll pivot to this then instead. People are going to be blown away by the sets and the production design that your crew put together for this. What set do you guys spend the most time on, whether it was just even constructing it or filming on it? Which one was the most elaborate for you to play around on?
I think probably the one that has the cryo chamber. That was something else. You know, we build a set that I really want to be, every set always want to be 360, that you can really pan in every direction and up and down. This might sound funny for a lot of people, but people don't build ceilings anymore. Like, there's no ceilings on a lot of sets because they add them in CG, because it's easier to put light through them, et cetera, et cetera. We build all the ceilings. Our sets were like, you know, a proper set where you look in every direction, everything is real. That one of the biggest ones was the one that had, you know, the airlock 5B when the characters come through, when they dock the ship the second time. It had basically, at some point, it had the Corbellan docked plus the airlock plus the corridor of the whole hallway of the station, and you could walk down, up and down the corridor. You can enter the Remus lab, and you could also get into the cryo chamber. It's a whole one massive space, just all connected together. It was really a dream come true to really be able to walk that every day, right? And very scary at night. At the end of the day, usually I stay with my script and studying what I'm going to do next day. And I stay too late and they turn off all the lights. And then so you go, hey, I'm still here. And they're all gone. And you have to kind of slowly walk out of that set. It's terrifying, I tell you that much.
I love a good hypothetical question. So please have fun with me on this one. Because now you obviously know what it's like to step behind the camera for an alien film. Just for fun, is there a moment from the original series, a single scene, that you most wish that you could have directed, just to know what it would have felt like to have experienced that moment from the other side of the camera?
It's probably the queen and the power loader fight the aliens, right? Such a great moment and iconic fight, and so scary and difficult as well to really portray it with an animatronic queen and all the technology that Cameron came up with for the power loader. And it's just such a great moment, right? I just would love to see it, to witness it just firsthand, right?
And sort of building off of the look of the film and recapturing, you guys had a really fun marketing bit where you sent out VHS tapes to the press to almost track down. But legitimately, it feels like when I sit down to watch this that I'm watching something that came out in the mid to late 80s. Can you talk about some of the tricks that you have to do? Is it a lighting technique? What are the discussions with your cinematographer in order to say, we're going to capture something that looks like it was sitting in a can and we found it and we're threading it up through a projector?
It's many things, I tell you. I mean, funny enough, one of them is the aspect ratio. That's why I tell everybody to watch on IMAX, because the IMAX aspect ratio is the full TV VHS aspect ratio, right? It's almost 4:3.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, when I was watching the other day, I was like, oh, this gives me that fuzzy, you know, yeah, that cozy feeling of watching a VHS, because, you know, you had the pan and scan, but a lot of times you had just as a full screen version of it, like without the bars. So that's how IMAX looks like that, and it's the full version of top and bottom of the screen. So you get, if you go to IMAX, you have a screen that goes from the floor to the ceiling with the film, which is very, very reminiscent of that VHS vibe. Then obviously it's the light and the textures, and there's two aspects of it. There's the look, that we did everything to make sure it matched the look of film, from the grain, from the halation, from all the textures of the image as it looked like film. Then is the sound. This is very precise, but the sound sounds like tape. Not the music, but the voices sound as if we were record on tape, like they used to be, right? So one of the big differences of old movies, not even old movies, from 93 and back, and about 93, 94, people stopped recording dialogue on set on tape and moved to digital. What that did was that basically you lost all that texture of the tape on the voices. But specifically on horror, when people scream, the tape saturates. So if you watch the original Alien, when people scream, you get this at the top of the screams. That is very classic horror. But these days, because it's digital, it has infinite range. So when people scream, you hear the scream perfectly, and there's something unholy about it. So in our movie, we put the whole sound through this process to sound exactly like tape. So when people scream, it saturates. It's a bit more high pitch as well. It has kind of a metallic texture to it. It just puts you right there. And that's all the technical aspect. And then it has to be on the writing. You don't want people to express themselves in a modern way. I really tried the characters to speak in a way that was more 80s. Like there's a moment where Kaylee has to shoot the screen and got mad. And I think today they will go like, oh, you motherfucker, whatever. But she goes, you son of a bitch. And I think that sounds way more 80s. You son of a bitch. And she said it that way. You know, I went to her. I was like, no, no, don't say motherfucker. Just say it this way. Just say it like Arnold would.
Yeah. I also appreciate you guys using the technology the way it looked in the 79 Alien. I hate whenever people do, like, you know, sequels to movies and all of a sudden in a matter of years, the technology has, you know, advanced. We're going to get you out of here on this one because we know you got to go. And this is a bit of a spoiler question. So we are going to save this for after people have seen the movie.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
Yes.
Look at that.
Yes.
That's so sick.
Oh my God.
That's incredible.
That is amazing.
Fetty, we love having you on this show, man. You are incredible.
You guys
such
are great.
A great guest. And you have had an amazing movie, dude. Thank you so much
Thank
for taking
so
the time.
Much.
We know how busy you are.
Thank you,
everybody.
We just love having you on. Thanks so much. We hope to see you again soon.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you so much.
See ya.
Thanks, Fetty. Take care. We need to thank, of course, Fetty Alvarez for coming on, and also his publicists who pushed really hard to get him some time on this show. He's been doing a ton of press. He literally was getting ready for the UK premiere of the film and fit us in right before he hopped into a car.
Which was right before we did this. Like, it's just been a...
Yeah, like minutes. Yeah. Literally minutes.
It's been a busy week. I do want to let everybody know that at the end of the interview, we did ask a very spoiler question, which will make a lot of sense to people after they've seen the film. So stay tuned to our channels, probably beginning next week sometime. We're going to give the film a little bit of room to breathe, but it warranted an incredible answer that we weren't anticipating to grow.
And a visual aid.
As it did. Yeah, and then also, right, exactly. He pulled something out on his phone, which has happened to us a bunch of times on the show. Michael Giacchino pulling out some things, and who else showed us some stuff on their phone? There was one horror director who showed us
the guy who did
stuff.
Evil Dead Rise.
Is that who it was?
Did he show us, or did he actually pull out the Book of the Dead?
No. Wasn't it the guy who did Saw, and he pulled out some stuff from Saw?
Yeah. He did he brought the puppet out.
Yes, that also happened.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But I also think we got Book of the Dead too.
I think we did get the Book of the Dead.
Well, and Rebecca Ferguson pulled out her phone to text Denis during our interview, which was a great moment. All time, real.
This show is great, honestly. Like, we really sleep on this show.
I think our best quality is how humble we are. I think that's
we are the best at being humble.
The show's had some amazing moments.
Yeah. No, all right, anyways. Incredible.
So the point being, Fetty shows us something really, 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 really cool. And gives us some great insight into a big spoiler from Romulus. So stay tuned to our normal feeds as to when we're going to be able to run that. You'll be able to see it. Okay, we're going to get into a spoiler-free conversation about Alien Romulus. The three of us have seen it. I want to start here. Gabe and I really, really love it. Like, I think it's honestly going to it's going to make my top 10. Well, I'd be surprised if it didn't make my top 10. Let me put it this way. And I think Gabe and I have had this very similar reaction to it, which is this movie doesn't deserve to be as good as it is. It's like the seventh film in a franchise. A lot of directors have come and gone through the series, tried to put their stamp on it. So I went into this just expecting the seventh Alien movie. I didn't really expect it to be as mind blowing to me as it was. And it just was, it just off the charts, exceeded all of my expectations. But I want to ask Jake something, because Jake, I know you didn't like it as much. Before you get into any kind of spoilers, do you at least recommend it?
Oh yeah. Like I wouldn't, like, I liked it. I've got like some nitpicks that kept me from crossing into the threshold that I really wanted to cross into, because I love the Alien franchise and I love the Xenomorph so much.
Yeah.
Do I love it as much as you guys? No, but I mean, I would still absolutely, like, again, and
okay,
I always preface what I'm about to say with this other thing I'm about to say, which is, like, not that I subscribe to the Rotten Tomatoes fresh or rotten, but like, if I were writing a Rotten Tomatoes review, I would give it I'd give it that little red tomato. I'd give it a fresh.
That's fine.
I just think it's more flawed than you guys do.
So we legitimately didn't talk about this. So
right.
All I kind of knew was that you had some issues with it. I wasn't sure if that tilted you into the this isn't worth watching.
No, no, God, no, absolutely.
Okay.
Not.
So what I really like about it a lot, without getting into the spoilers yet, is how it's doing something that I think Star Wars tried to do a bit with Andor, which is tell a story set in the universe, but from the perspective of ground level people. Because it touches on the Weyland Yutani Corporation, which has been a prevalent theme through all the other movies that have been coming out. And then I think even when Ridley went back into it with Prometheus and Covenant and really tried to dig into the deep mythology and the lore of it, he got into the idea of Weyland Yutani and it kind of went sprawling big and epic, which is fine. I think you can do that. And then this was like, okay, while all that's happening, I'm going to tell you this little story about this heist that took place with these people who are just being oppressed by the corporation, and they want something better for themselves. So they're going to try to steal something and things go horribly wrong, which is a really simple setup that we've seen told many, many times before, but they're going to tell it in the world of Alien. And that to me was just like a stroke of like, oh, it's such a simple idea, but executed. If you take a simple idea and then you execute it as well as this movie does, it's going to lead to something really, really special.
Yeah.
I think the key being the characters. I cared more about the characters than I anticipated going into it. And anytime a heist comes together, you know, you're going to see the sort of blueprint of characters that have to be filled in. I just think this movie did an incredible job of like creating alternate takes on those characters and making me care deeply about them. And maybe it's just because Kaylee Spaney is as good as she is, because I love the character of Rain and I think she's phenomenal in it. I'm sorry, I've been talking too much. Gabe, what were you going to say?
No, as you say, I think you hit on a really interesting point, which is about the simplicity of its plot. Mm. It allows it to, like, a sci-fi movie especially can very easily get like, well, check out how crazy our plot is, and that's like the interesting bit that fans can glom onto. But because it comes with this, like, these characters want this and this is how they're going to do it, it just launches you. It allows so much more time for you to get attached to those characters and then spend time in the sort of alien horror of it.
Sure.
I think I don't know if I had texted you or Jake, but you mentioned the characters. It's so easy. You and I were talking about how this has no right to be as good as it is. And I think what we mean by that is we wouldn't be surprised if it had many of the pitfalls that you might see in a movie like this.
Sure.
It would be really simple for this kind of movie to have a bunch of characters that it plans on doing a bunch of horror stuff to, that just kind of puts them in a situation and lets it happen to them. But this really gives a good like half hour to 40 minutes of its runtime getting you to really care for its characters, to the point where I think it was like 20 minutes in. One, I'm smiling from ear to ear from the start of this movie, because as you heard in the interview, the level of detail that went into making this feel like it was made between the first and the second movie, not just set between the first and the second movie, is just, you just feel it in the theater. And so I was smiling from ear to ear, being like, oh, I can't believe I'm feeling that. I'm almost feeling nostalgic about this movie I've never even seen. And about 20 minutes in, I was like, I want this to work out. I want them all to make it. And now I'm fucked because this is an alien movie. And there's no way that it's going to go that well. And that's just really special. It's really special to sort of, for a movie to allow you to really attach yourself to those characters in that way.
And this might be spoiler-ish because I want to discuss a specific relationship, but I'll hold that.
We can get Jake's sort of top level and then we can dive into spoilers.
Okay, yeah, let's do that. Yep.
Here's what I'll say is that whenever you're making an alien movie, you're given a standard box of toys to play with. And at this point, like the credit for those toys goes to Ridley and then obviously to some degree, James Cameron. Moving forward, like those toys, whether it's the Xenomorph or the Chestburster or the Facehugger or what have you, like they're already established. So them being in your movie, you don't get points for that because you're playing with someone else's toys. What you get points for is how you play with them. What can you do with these things that we've seen for almost 50 years that makes me feel like I've never seen that before? One of the things I have to give him credit for, because I really dug the first two acts of this movie. There's a moment that is a line throwback to a previous film that is expressed in this film that is one of my least favorite moments of a movie this year. And from that moment on, everything that followed after kind of lost me. But before that, there were some sequences where I thought, damn, that's really cool. Like filmmakers have had these toys to play with for almost 50 years and no one's done that with them. There's a sequence involving blood and zero gravity that I thought was just phenomenal. There's a sequence involving trying to evade the facehuggers by messing with the temperature versus your own body temperature, which I thought was genius. There are some things where I thought, my God, like that's such a good idea. I'm amazed it's taken that long for someone to play with that in that way. So there are a lot of sequences that I would rank set in terms of set pieces as some of my favorite set pieces of the series. For me, my biggest complaint is from that moment on that we'll touch on through the finale of the film, it not just lost me, but I actively disliked it. So it left me with a bad taste in my mouth, and by no means undid the goodwill that it had built within that first, what do you want to call it, hour 30?
Yeah, probably.
You know, because I up to that point, I was like, oh, I'm in. I don't think I ever crossed that threshold of love, but I was like, okay, I'm really digging this. And if it sticks the landing with a cool big epic finale, then I'm sold. I'm in. And it kind of went the opposite direction for me, unfortunately. But I still very much dug a lot about this movie.
Okay. I think that's a good place for us to sort of transition into a more spoiler talk. Jake would say he recommends it. Gabe and I think it's extremely high on our list in terms of year-end type things that we're going to be able to see.
Would you guys hate me if I told you it's bottom half Alien for me?
Yeah.
For me, it's Alien, Aliens. Call me crazy. I love Prometheus. I'm a huge Prometheus fan. I love Covenant, and I also, all of its flaws, I am also a fan of just the ugliness of Fincher's Alien 3.
You'd put it below Alien 3?
I would put it below. Well,
you
Alien
are
3.
Fucking wow. Nuts.
It's crazy that today is the day the show the ended. That's wild.
Yeah, I love the soullessness of Alien 3.
You love bad movies.
Put it above the Alien vs. Predator movies?
Yeah, God, yeah. Yeah.
I might put the Alien vs. Predator movies above Alien 3. Although yeah,
I'd put it above Resurrection, but wow. I don't know.
Well, I guess at least that says that you very much enjoy Alien movies.
Here's the thing. Alien movies are like pizza. Like even if a bad pizza shows up, I'm still happy about it.
Sure,
I'm still
going to
eat it, you know?
Yeah. I would say that this movie that Romulus is to me, and I'm not kidding you, top two.
And you'd put it above Ridley's?
So I've always been a aliens over aliens.
Sure,
guy.
Which is fine.
I've always been an aliens.
Which is
over
like
alien.
It's there's no right answer.
Yeah, but I'm saying 10 versus 9.5.
Yeah. Whenever right. I watch, I always on paper would say I prefer Alien over Aliens just because I lean horror. I like the horror angle. Mm-hmm. But whichever one I watch, because I rewatched not all of them, but a lot of them to get ready for this one. Whenever I'm rewatching one. Whether it's Alien or Aliens, whichever one I'm watching in that moment is the one I'm convinced
is
I like more. Like whenever because I rewatched Alien, I was like, oh yeah, this is it. This is a masterpiece. And then when you watch Aliens, I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know that I agree with Sean's order, but to his point, I think I agree in that. I think the Alien franchise to this point has been there's Alien and Aliens, and then there's everything else.
Yeah, and that's fair.
And not to completely dismiss those, because I agree with Jake. There's a lot of fun to be had there, but kind of the like, understanding as fans of that is there's Alien and Aliens and then there's everything else, and now I think there's Alien, Aliens, Alien Romulus and everything else. Like I think it hits. I agree with Sean in that I think it's right in line with the first two.
What blows me away the most about this movie is the way he thread the needle between
the two.
Alien and Aliens. I think if you like either of those or prefer one or the other, you're going to find stuff in this movie.
I would agree with that.
One thing I want to say in the spoiler-free section for anyone who's going to dip out, and not to spoil any, I'm not going to get into details about this, but what I think I said to both of you, I love that you can tell this one is made by the guy that made Don't Breathe. Like, it is such a Fede Alvarez movie. It doesn't feel like a director emulating James Cameron and Ridley Scott. He's very much influenced by them, but it's also, it hits this Fede Alvarez thread.
I would agree.
Like, by the time you get to the end of it, you're like, of course, this is the guy that had to make this movie, which I think is is amazing.
All right, let's throw to a really quick ad break. And on the other side, this is going to be reserved for people who have seen Romulus already and want to get into the nitty gritty. And we are back. Okay, spoilers. Don't listen unless you have seen Romulus or don't care and want to hear what happens.
And if you don't care, I think you should care and you should go see this movie. I'll say
you don't care. What are you doing here?
I would agree with Jake 100%. The line, get away from her, you bitch.
That made me want to claw my face off.
I just hate when movies do that.
I hate when movies do that. Like I hate that every Terminator has to have a I'll be back. I can't stand that thing.
It's
so
the
bad.
One thing I would want taken out. What sucks is it comes right after a perfect callback.
The elevator scene was great.
Well, the elevator scene's great, but it's literally her wincing. It's the two shot of the xenomorph and her, and it's a callback to that shot, but it happens naturally. It feels great.
Mm-hmm.
The casual audience member might be like, oh, this feels familiar and I don't know why. People who know, you know, it's a perfect kind of callback thing without being too on the nose. And then they just say the line and I'm like,
My theater groaned.
Yeah, it's the only nitpick that I think like I just want it to be gone.
Yeah. Because on the flip side, I thought the, now that we're in spoilers, I thought that it's going to be a source of contention for people. I thought, not, it's not Ash, but Rook, Ian Holm.
Ian Holm, yeah.
I thought was very well handled. And it makes sense, yeah, because he's a synthetic figure. Yeah. He's an android. It's different than bringing back Peter Cullen.
Yes.
To play Tarkin and Rogue One. There's a giant difference.
There's
the idea being the same, but story wise, this makes logical sense that there would be more.
I wonder.
100%.
Yeah. I think especially. I agree. The only thing is, I think that there's moments there where it's a little distracting, but that's just what the technology is when they're doing the sort of facial replacement stuff. Mm-hmm. And you're right, like it gets that leeway. I almost would have just preferred to be fully animatronic and just kind of live in that.
He mentioned in the interview that a lot of it was animatronic, but also a huge portion of the performance is sort of in this grainy black and white TV monitor.
Those moments are really thing. Works.
And that actually, I think, made it even look better because it kind whenever we see him for the first time, because I don't know, but I didn't know that was going to be a part of the film. So I was pretty shocked by that.
I genuinely went,
oh no.
Well, I did a lot of math in my head of like, wait, what ship are we on? Can that be Ian Holm?
But it's just
like
a different version of the same model.
He's beheaded.
Yeah, but that's what I was trying to remember. Yeah. I was trying to think in Alien because he was in half.
Yeah.
I was like, when did we last see him? How was he damaged? Like, I was doing all that in my head really fast.
Also, how cool is it that, like, the set for this movie is another Alien, like, it's another, like, ship being taken over by a xenomorph with a fight. Like, you get all those clues of, like, oh, they killed one up here and all. Like, it's so cool that it's instead of, we get the new ship that gets infested.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we also get to, like, come in and live.
It was
in
very
this.
Like aliens on like LV-426 kind of when they were walking through and seeing all that. Remember when they showed up and because they had established the colony and all the people from the colony were like up in the walls and everything.
Before we get too much deeper, because we didn't mention this in spoiler free and I don't want it to get lost, is David Johnson as Andy, as the synth,
is genuinely brilliant.
Him and Kaylee Spaney are the whole cast is very good. We could single out everybody with wonderful moments.
Yep.
Isabella Merced, of course, gets some like incredible big horror kind of moments. But David Johnson is so good.
Yes.
He is so good. He gets to play two different versions of the character and he threads that in this like wonderful
His eyes.
This is a huge part of the reason why I love this movie as much as I do, is because the way that they play around with Kaylee Spaney and her emotional connection to a synth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the choices that the synth would make at key times throughout the story. And the way that I sort of equated it to Gabe was that like, he's like a just a piece of technology. He's like a cell phone. It'd be like having a deep relationship with your cell phone and wondering why it's doing certain things.
Sure.
And a very simple narrative solution of changing the chip inside of the android, you know, changes the person's trajectory. Sure. And that's a fascinating way to do it, and a very easy way to do it.
One of those ideas, or going back to like, how did it take someone almost 50 years to come up with, because I don't want to say that the idea is simple because it's a great idea, but like it makes so much sense that I'm amazed that it took someone this long to come up with it.
And so there are really tense, suspenseful moments that, again, David Johnson plays so beautifully of just like, well, of course he's going to behave this way. You know, like something as simple as his finger potentially having to be used to open doors and unlock certain things. Mm-hmm. And then him pausing and realizing, no, this is for the better of whatever new mission I'm on kind of thing was great.
And mathematically, I'm not going to do it because I don't think the odds are in our favor.
The sort of like that character treads on to your point of like it's a synth, but they allow that, whether it's through like sort of the malfunctioning that he has versus, you know, post upgrade, like whatever that is that they're tapping into, creates these like, is this a person? Is there real emotion here? Is this, you know, an iRobot situation that we're watching? And there's great moments even whenever he's upgraded. There's that line when she's like, how could you do that, after he lets his sister, I think it's after Merced gets killed.
Yeah.
And they're like, how, she's like, how could you do that? And he like stops her and says, leave someone behind.
Yeah.
After, you know, he find, after, this is after the previous Andy had found out that that was the plan for him.
Yeah.
It's just like this wonderful, like that works as the analytical Andy just saying like, how could I do that? Like you did that. Like I'm coming to you with the same thing, but yeah. It also works as an underlying emotional Andy of, like, is there a part of him that is hurt that's still inside this character that's
right.
That's like, what do you mean? Like, why are you saying that to me? You know, you were going to do the same.
It's a terrific character.
It's amazing.
I honestly do think that like his character and his performance is a huge part of the reason why this movie is as good as it is to me. Mm-hmm. His performance is incredible.
The synths, for like they have yielded great performances. Like going back to Ian Holm, Lance Henriksen, I believe for Aliens, mm-hmm. and then Fassbender was great in Prometheus and Covenant.
Yeah.
I mean it's interesting that oftentimes that the androids tend to yield some of the best performances in the series.
Well, in the moment when he gets the chip from the Ian Holm android from Rook, and he sort of throws his head back.
Yeah, yeah.
And she goes, no, he's okay. He's just rebooting. Yeah. And in that moment, I was like, oh, shit.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to get all of his memories of everything that's happened.
And then he has
happened.
Like a John Wick moment when he comes back with his reflexes and catches the thing. I was like, are we about to hear it?
Oh, that was so sick. That was so sick. Yes, that was great. Okay, so, but let me keep going into nitpicks because I'm with Jake in this sense. The end with the childbirth and the baby quickly becoming one of the engineers? Is that what those things are?
Because there was more of a tie to Prometheus in this film
the
than I expected
there to be.
The character
design was definitely
Even just the weren't the eggs, it was sort of the containers, like the egg-shaped containers where they got the black goo out of, like those are straight out of Prometheus.
Yeah, see, and that's where I felt like the movie tried to have its cake and eat it too.
Sure.
Like, it could have been very contentious to be between Alien and Aliens, and everything with the childbirth is like, oh, but also don't forget Covenant and Prometheus. You know, like they're part of this universe as well too. And not that it didn't work for me, because I thought it was really terrifying and I was cool with, you know, the battle between Kaylee Spaney and this engineer-esque type character, and I was on board with all of it. But I did feel, if anything, it was a bit of a reach too far of like, If the movie had ended with all of them just being put into stasis and it left the dangling plot thread of, well, what's going to happen to the baby later, I would have been okay. It's 10 minutes. I didn't mind.
I disagree. I would say I disagree on that. That for me was the turn where
that's the fettiness.
This is the turkey baser moment is that. And I only saw that as a nod. I didn't. And maybe I need to rewatch those. Maybe it's more solidifying itself as like, this is a Prometheus thing. To me, I just figured that character design was a nod to the engineers because it's human DNA and this DNA sort of mixing. And so that's why but to me, it felt like it's a whole new creature. It's a whole new thing that he's getting to experiment and play with that we haven't seen, which is very cool. But I thought that set piece was, I mean, this is just a list of incredible set pieces. The elevator is amazing. The zero G acid blood is another like,
that was great.
This didn't happen already. Like Jake, you said it perfectly.
So
this didn't
badass.
Happen already. This is brilliant. And to me, I was reminded of Fetty Alvarez's voice in this with that moment. And I thought that it really earned its like horror stripes in that moment. It has those, but then when it's like the body horror of like the birth and then it coming back and it going to like suck the life out of her to like finish growing. And then that whole fight with the,
was insane.
It's so fucked up body horror stuff. That's fun in the context of watching a body horror kind of movie.
Yeah.
But I thought the set piece, and you had mentioned as well, those shots when she's dangling after fighting that thing is just incredible.
Well, I thought the movie, and I think I told you this as well too, had like three good ticking clock subplots happening. Like they have to finish this before they reach the rings, or the ship's going to be incinerated. They got to get, you know, through the cryogenic area before this amount of time runs out. And they all were logically built in beautifully. And I think they all kind of paid off as well too. The one that you just mentioned, which I forgot about, was something that they had set up and teased later.
Was the gravity bit?
No.
To me, that was a wonderful payoff of doing all the zero G stuff. That was a great payoff.
The pull the trigger halfway and it's going to help you aim.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The lock aim. So that way, she's got to pick off all those aliens. I was like, this is a girl who's never been to space before.
That's aliens versus alien right there.
Yeah.
That moment. Yes. So incredible.
Yes, exactly. Loved it. Loved it so much. So
for me, the final battle, I was just sort of like, oh, is this it? This is our big finale. I just wasn't. I get the idea of it, you know, but at the end of the day, like I wanted to see I wanted a big alien finale. I didn't want this sort of new hybrid trying stuff. Like the finale wasn't the place I wanted to try out that. And okay. maybe if they had worked that in like halfway through the movie and like gave it a moment, you know, that would have been more interesting. But I wanted the finale of my alien movie to be an alien movie.
I guess I would have in my head. That's what the scene right before that is. This is like an extra, you get like an extra horror Betty Alvarez sort of ending on top of the, you know, get away from her, you bitch moment in those set pieces. But
so anyway. let me ask a question. Fetty says that there's an indication of where Ripley could be, right? The only time that we go on to the Nostromo. Which is where Ripley would be, right? Is it Ripley?
No. The Nostromo is blown up. She goes into the escape pod and is sleeping.
Okay.
But maybe she's nearby. Like maybe she's still.
That's the remnants that we see sort of floating
in the very
around.
Beginning.
And they pick the alien up.
Yeah.
And that team is from Weyland-Yutani, I'm going to assume.
Yeah.
So that's the opening is the ship that we end up on, the space station.
Yeah.
Is them. Which I thought was a really, that opening. Oh, I didn't even mention that opening.
That opening was great.
Jurassic Park-ass opening. When they're getting the dinosaurs together and like the close shots and you're just kind of hearing the, I was like, this is such of its era. It's so
really
good.
Cool. Very, very cool. Okay. So I got to go back and rewatch it now.
I think that might be where it is. Logically, you'd think she'd be near there. So maybe it's there somewhere. Are we to assume also that this humanoid xenomorph that got thrown into the ring is still alive? Because it's,
I would assume it kind of burned off.
They're impenetrable.
Yeah. I mean, it hasn't shown up over the next, that we know of, hasn't shown up.
But that's kind of the alien way is like, well, this has just been asleep in space, frozen, and then it can pop up, 600 years from now if it has to, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's someone else's problem.
But again, it feels like very much an alien thread, which is like,
oh yeah,
you didn't see its head explode. You saw it get ejected through there.
Going back to one of the points that Fede sort of made and was very much tiptoeing around, what do we think the movie was hinting about in terms of Ripley?
The involvement,
do you think is it something as simple as like a screen in the background is tracing where she's at? Or
you mentioned that I thought was a really good theory of like maybe that ship had picked up the alien, but they also picked up a signal of the escape pod, and they were gonna figure that out. Maybe she's on that ship as well. Like maybe they picked up her escape pod, but she's still in cryo sleep somewhere. Yeah. Maybe she's in one of those cryo chambers with. Yeah. That they didn't use, like, because they didn't open up. I don't know. Like, you think they would find that? It would show, like, it's really
intriguing.
Though.
We definitely touched on something.
That was cool.
He was very much watching him tap dance in real time was.
And
I
respect wanting that moment to live for the fans too.
Sure, of course.
This is gonna sound stupid, but I just haven't watched Alien and Aliens probably as near as the time when Jake has. But so she goes into cryogenic sleep at the end of Alien. But where do we see her when Aliens? At what point does she join the story?
It's been 57 years.
Right.
She's been floating through space and sleeping for 57 years. Her and Jonesy, her and the cat.
Right.
And then she's being another ship finds her and then wakes her up.
Okay.
But she's having these dreams.
Right.
That the chest burster is bursting out of her chest.
Okay, but when we see her in Alien, she's still floating somewhere.
It's like right as she's waking up.
Okay.
Kind of like the way that this picks up the alien, the xenomorph.
A little bit,
It's kind of a similar parallel.
Okay. All right. Well, Pay attention as you're watching Romulus. And hit us with your theories in the comments down below as to where you think Ripley, or as Jake likes to call her, Ridley.
That's going to bother me for the rest of my life.
I'm curious. Hit the comments if you
my
noticed.
My tombstone is going to say Jake Hamilton called Ripley Ridley.
And he still doesn't answer any of your questions.
Sean right there going, he did.
He did.
He did. And he
still
won't answer
your question that day. All right, we're going to end with a really quick IMDb game and then close it out for the week. Gabriel, we haven't played this game in a while. Take it away, sir.
Yes, so this is going to be a fun. I have just a handful to go through. We are going to do an Alien Director's Edition of the IMDb game. This is your first time joining us. IMDb game, we didn't invent this. It's one we've seen played around. Douglas Movies plays it a lot. I believe he got it from a radio show in Dallas or Houston or something. Wonderful game. Play it with your friends. It is fantastic. And what we do is I'll give these gentlemen a name, and they will have to guess which are the four listed projects, because there's TV on there as well, that this person has on their IMDb page, their Internet Movie Database page, is their four known for projects. And we're going to kick things off with Ridley Scott. So I ask you, gentlemen, what are Ridley Scott's top four most known for projects according to IMDb?
Wow. Wait, you got to write them down.
I don't have pen and paper. Here, I got them. Write them down mentally.
Okay. If you can type them, you can type them.
Can I type them on my phone?
Yeah. I trust you. Okay. If you need this win that bad, Jake, it's yours. Yeah.
I was gonna say you can't just start saying them.
Yeah. Top four most known for Ridley Scott. This is a tough one because he has 161. Projects that he's produced.
You joke about or don't joke about playing this game with your friends. I actually was hanging out with a friend of mine the other day, and she was talking about how much she loves Robin Williams, and I was like, oh my god! I was like, here's the thing: we played this game on our podcast. It's really great. What you know? And because she, I was like, what do you think? And she had such a good time playing. We did it, the IMDb game with Robin Williams, and see, she had such a good time. She was like, okay, let's do a few more.
It's so fun.
And I tried to explain to her is the whole concept is sometimes it makes sense and sometimes it doesn't. There is no rhyme or it doesn't really, other than like knowing movies, there's no skill required.
No, none.
Okay.
And with someone like Ridley, it's like, how do you even zoom in? It's impossible. So, all right, I got my four.
Like there are some cases where like, okay, the publicist called IMDb and got it. Like, I feel like Spielberg's.
Right.
Were meticulously chosen.
Yeah. It can be nonsensical.
Sometimes you're like, oh, they don't care.
It's fun playing with some people who we have asked them, like, hey, do you know how yours get done? Yeah. And they're like, no.
Quentin didn't know. And he's someone who I would have thought would have been meticulous about what his four are.
They're true.
All right, Sean, I'll you start us off. What are his top four most known for according to IMDb?
I did Gladiator, Blade Runner, Alien, and Thelma and Louise.
Okay. And Jakey? Alien, Blade Runner, Thelma and Louise, Gladiator.
Wow. That's very funny.
All right. His top four, most known four.
Of all the movies that Ridley has done, we chose the same four. That's crazy.
His top four, most known four, according to IMDb, are Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Gladiator.
Yeah.
Thelma and Louise.
Hey!
And The Martian.
No! All right.
My outside one of like, oh, maybe I should use this was Black Hawk Down.
That's a good one. I bet that's one that rotates in and out.
Yeah. Martian is a quiet, huge hit for
I love Martian.
Huge hit, yeah.
I mean, dude, do you remember, I don't know if you remember the Oscar season, people thought like, oh, he might win director for this, like kind of as a like, hey, and then he didn't even end up getting nominated.
It's a great movie.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Did you ever read the book? The book's really good.
I did.
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
All right. So that means up next, gentlemen, we have
Jim Cameron.
We have Sir James Cameron, as we like to call him. His top four. What are James Cameron's top four most known for projects according to IMDb?
This would be a fun topic on the show. Is this franchise have the greatest collection of directors?
I mean,
can
it's
we think
there.
Of another franchise that has like even, right off the bat? They've got Ridley, Cameron, and Fincher.
And now they have Fetty. And
who has that?
I was going to mention, I'll mention Resurrection is not one that you would know, but has a great filmography.
Who is it?
Jean-Pierre Jeunet, who did Amelie.
Yeah.
A Very Long Engagement, Delicatessen, and the City of Lost Children. I wasn't going to have us play that one. That's his top four because I didn't think you guys would pull four projects from this is no offense to Jean-Pierre Jeunet.
Good pull.
But right now we're playing James Cameron. What are the top four movies from James Cameron? Are any of them untitled Avatar sequels? We'll wait to find out.
Hey, I'm count me in as excited for Fire and Ash, man.
Yeah, man. Hey, I think we said it. The Way of Water really like reset expectations.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who was always very public about not loving the first Avatar, the way I fell in love with Way of Water transformed my whole perspective on that series.
He went from making, was it Fern Gully was the...
Yeah, yeah.
And Fern now Gully he's making, and then he made Terminator.
All right, I'm ready.
All right. Jake, you start us off. What are the top four most known for projects, according to IMDb, for Mr. James Cameron?
I'm going Aliens.
Okay.
T2, Titanic, and the first Avatar.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sean?
All right. I have three of the same. I have Titanic, T2, and the first Avatar. And then I got a little spicy, and I went with True Lies.
Ooh, spicy. You didn't go Dark Angel?
No, I did think about Dark Angel, though.
His top four, James Cameron's top four most known for projects, according to IMDb, are Aliens.
Ah, damn it.
Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
Okay.
Avatar, The Way of Water.
Damn.
And Avatar. Jake gets the point with three correct to Sean's two, if I had that down correctly.
Titanic is not on his list.
That's crazy.
Pretty crazy. I think, you know,
come on.
Maybe somebody came in and put both Avatars on here because they're selling Avatar movies now.
I guess so.
But, you know, I mean, there's True Lies. Keep going. It's James Cameron.
Are we doing, because I feel like Fincher is going to be hard. I feel like Fincher is going to be the hardest.
Up next, we have David Fincher. You're correct. What are the top four most known for projects, according to IMDb, for David Fincher? David Fincher. I was explaining this. I had that moment where my partner she's a huge movie fan, but she's not like a movie encyclopedia knowledge behind the scenes stuff. So I get to have really fun moments where I get to nerd out and be like, oh, so this was this. And like, you know, I'm telling her the Aliens pitch meeting story and things like that, which is a lot of fun. And so I was telling her about, I was like, oh, David Fincher. I was like, one of my favorite stories is, you know, it's David Fincher's first movie. And there's like, it was such a shit show. And there's clips of him, again, an established director. He had done like 1,000 music videos to that point. But like the clip of him on set, like talking into the microphone, saying like 20th Century Fox doesn't know what the fuck they're doing. Like,
yeah,
getting to tell the story about that being a shit show. I was like, and then he became one of the best directors working today, if not of all time. Like, it's just, what a fun story.
This is the hardest one.
This is breaking my brain.
I could legitimately go 0-4.
0-4. And you wouldn't be wrong. He's got, I mean, every one of his movies, I'd say he's known for.
I went a little standard and a little spicy.
Sean, are you ready?
I'm ready, but I don't like this.
All right, go ahead and give me your top four most known for projects for David Fincher, according to IMDb.
Fight Club, Seven, Gone Girl, and Mindhunter.
He went spice. Jakey, your four projects.
Fight Club, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, Social Network, and Gone Girl.
Okay. His top four. David Fincher's
Mindhunter is a smart... That might be the...
Well, I left off Zodiac and Social Network. And
Zodiac!
Oh! David Fincher's top four most known for projects, according to IMDb,
Mank,
are The Social Network.
Damn it.
Gone Girl.
Yes!
Seven.
Yes!
And Zodiac. You're both tied again. I'll give you each a point.
How do you leave off Fight Club?
Fight Club. I don't know.
Fight Club was the first one I wrote. I thought, okay, well, Fight Club will definitely be on there.
That brings us to the new kid on the block, Fede Alvarez. Again, shout out Jean-Pierre Jeunet, Amelie. The City of Lost Children, Delicatessen, and A Very Long Engagement. Yeah. His top four. Yeah.
Those are the ones I would have chosen.
Yeah, I believe you. I'll give you a point. Yes,
I get all those.
Yeah.
What are Fede Alvarez's top four most known for projects according to IMDb, gentlemen? I mean, does this kind of solidify? He was already, I think, wonderfully well-regarded filmmaker, especially horror, you know, space director. This just feels like he's hitting a new level, and I'm just excited to see what he continues to do. Fede Alvarez, how's this one for you? Are you struggling, or you feel this is straightforward?
My concern about this one is, well, I'll give my thoughts once we get locked in.
Okay. Are you locked in, Jake?
Yeah, I'm locked in.
Okay. Sean, how you doing?
I'm ready.
This is our last round. This is our last round. And I'll remind you, the score. Jake is winning 3-2. But Sean can take the win if he gets all four correct. He gets a bonus point. Can. So this is still very much available.
Yeah.
Still very much available.
Nail cutter, baby.
With that, I'll let Sean go first.
All right.
Let Sean go first.
I'm going with Don't Breathe 1 and 2, Evil Dead, and Girl in the Spiderweb.
Okay. And Jakey.
I fucked up, and I got to be honest.
Okay. Would you do the wrong girl in this Dragon Tattoo? Yeah. Yeah? Okay, give me your four. Give me your four.
But I know what he means.
Don't breathe 2, Evil Dead, Dragon Tattoo. Well, here before I reveal, how do we want to score that?
I got the wrong movie.
It's not a movie he made.
I got the wrong movie.
Is he known for it?
Interesting.
Maybe by proxy.
Interesting.
His top four most known for, according to IMDb, are Evil Dead.
Okay.
Don't Breathe 2.
Okay.
Nice. Okay.
Don't Breathe.
Yes.
And the Girl in the Spider's Web.
Yes!
Sean gets the bonus point.
The kid.
And he wins 4-3.
Wait, hold on, go back. I've changed my mind about how we should handle this whole Girl with the Dragon Tattoo thing.
Yes!
I really think intent matters, guys. Intent matters. Yeah.
You knew what I meant.
Let me tell you, the only reason I know the name of that movie is because I got to cover that junket in Rome. Thank you, Fede Alvarez.
The kid.
The kid pulls it out.
I'm so mad at myself.
All right, well, this is I'm gonna change our call to action, Gabe.
Go ahead.
Is there a franchise that has a better collection of directors? I'd like to hear from anybody down below if you can think of one, because I'm blanking currently, so let us know. And if you also want to play along with our original one, we're going to go with favorite alien set piece, so let us know either of those below. But that, and go see Alien Romulus, because we highly, highly recommend it. No, so listen, no full show next week. We're wrapping up.
That helps me. That helps.
Some summer breaks.
I'm also on vacation, so thank you. Thank you for and, your consideration.
Hey, Gabe's coming up for the DNC for vacation.
Yes.
Jake has the DNC. Gabe's taking some vacation. But we do have another interview coming, and as well, that spoiler-filled moment from our interview with Fede. So go see Romulus. Come back. Watch that. We will have new content for you guys.
More for you next week.
Not a full show. Yeah. In the meantime, follow us on social media at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, at Sean_O'Connell, at Bia Kovach, and the show is at Real Blend. Thank you very much for tuning in. We'll be back very soon. Until next week. No.
Get away from her, you bitch.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.